I want to say just a word about the title of the sermon today, A Royal Waste of Time. It's the title of a book by Marva Dawn, who is a theologian and has worked in churches as a musician and as a preacher and teaches at college and seminary level and brings a lot of practical experience to her theologizing about worship. And this book is a series of sermons and essays that she's written about the practice of worship and especially about the idea that this is Sabbath time. This is a time when everything else stops and we are no longer productive, that we are wasting our time when we gather here together, but we're wasting time in the presence of God and in the magnificence and majesty of God. So I just wanted to make sure that I was not saying anything insulting in any way about what it is that we're doing here today. She actually ended up in the title of the book saying, A Royal Waste of Time, just so no one would say, what? How can you say that? But it has to do with this time that we gather together being an hour that is out of our regular practice, our mundane worldly practices throughout the week, that we get to do something different when we're here for this hour. Now, many years ago, just as I was embarking on my career in professional ministry, I went to a workshop on Christian education, especially for young children, faith development in young children, and how we teach children about faith. And we worked on all of the practical things having to do with Sunday school, and teaching the Bible and the songs and opportunities for artistic expression and opportunities for asking questions and exploring answers. But the leader of the workshop said there is really only one thing that we want children to learn from their early church experience, and that is to know that they are loved in a place where we talk about God. We want them to know that they are loved in a place where we talk about God. So all week I've been thinking about worship, this hour when we gather on Sunday morning, as I've been exploring the great ends of the church, these themes of why it is that church exists, what is the purpose and the goal of being church. And one of those in the Presbyterian tradition, one of those great ends of the church is the maintenance of divine worship. One of the six main reasons that church exists, according to this Presbyterian tradition, is to see to it that worship happens, and that it happens as a group experience, corporate worship, we call it, which is kind of a sad use of the word, but but comes from the word for the body, worshiping as a body, corporate worship. And I've been struggling all week to think, how can I talk about worship in 20 minutes? And there's so many ways to talk about it and to explore the how and the why and the when and the who and the where, what kind of music, what level of formality or informality do we aim for, what language choices do we make, what liturgical choices about the order of things, what visual aspects are included in the planning of this time. And those are all important questions, and just as an aside, those are questions that we will explore together on this Wednesday night Advent class that's starting this week. Details in your bulletin. But trying to distill the why of worship to its essence, I kept being reminded of the words of that workshop leader so many years ago in this education workshop, where she said, we want children to know that they are loved in a place where we talk about God. And I would shift that ever so slightly to say that in worship, we want to know that we are loved in a place where we talk to God. Of course, we talk about God as well in the celebration, in this Sunday morning hour. There is always an educational component to what we do in corporate worship. But that purpose of worship, to know that we are loved in a place where we talk to God, works for me as a basic definition. It says that there is an hour that is set apart from the rest of the busy week when we gather with people we know and love and who know us and love us, And together we enter consciously and intentionally into the presence of the sacred, with a capital S. Back in 1997, when I was thinking about applying for the job here, as pastor of this church, I came incognito to a Sunday celebration just to see what Montclair Presbyterian Church's worship was like. And this was during the interim time when Carl Shadley was the interim pastor. And there was this wonderful sense of joy in being together and humor and informality. I remember there was one point in the service where people were announcing things that were going on in their lives, concerns and joys. And one person, I honestly don't remember who it was, and I don't remember all the details, so I probably have them wrong. But there was something about a kid or a grandkid or some family member who had been playing in an ultimate frisbee, like international tournament, and their team had won in Australia or someplace, I don't remember. And I remember thinking, that's an interesting thing to announce in the worship service. Cool, you know. And I wondered what Carl's response was going to be, and he said, "You must be so proud." And I thought, that's the perfect thing to say. It's funny, and it's slightly ironic, and it affirms, you know, this, that those are the things we celebrate when we get together, and that's what family's about, and so on. And I loved it. Part of the reason is because I take humor very seriously, if that's not too much of a paradox. Especially in worship, I deeply believe that humor is a gift of the Holy Spirit that helps us to be drawn closer in relationship to each other and closer in relationship to God, that God joins in the laughter when we laugh together in the middle of the celebration hour. And I love informality as well. It helps us, again, to connect to each other and to interact with each other in ways that more formal worship services don't create. There are other ways that people connect in more formal worship, but I enjoy informality and that flow to a service. The risk, of course, is that humor and informality, if not used well or not understood well, can do the opposite thing. They can insulate us from the sacred. They can trivialize our worship if we forget that the informality and the humor are meant to connect us with God, if we sort of lose that sense of the center. There are lots of other things that can trivialize worship, and that could be a whole other series of sermons, but that's the thing that I'm concerned about when informality and humor are an important part of the worship service, that we can forget the focus. And this passage from Ephesians has some wonderful language in it. It starts off with this prayer for the people who are reading this letter. "For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father," and using the word Father for God in those days was a way of invoking the intimacy of the relationship with God, intimate as a family relationship, "for whom every family in heaven and on earth takes its name," that all of us have God's last name. We are all related as kindred in God. So the beginning of this prayer is gratitude for the intimacy of family, for this horizontal nature to our relationships with one another and with God. God on the same plane as we are, as a member of our family. But this letter doesn't just speak to the horizontal relationship that we have. It goes on to say, "And I pray that you may have the power to comprehend with all the saints," meaning all those people who are sitting around you in worship, believe it or not, that's what the word saints refers to, "what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of God that surpasses knowledge," the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, "so that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." Those are cosmic words. Those are universal words. This reference to the way that God is so vast, so all-encompassing, that God goes deeper and goes higher and goes more broadly and goes longer than anything we can possibly imagine. Within that is this love of Christ, and then through that is this fullness that we get filled with, this incomprehensible vastness of God fills us up. And that's the vertical dimension, this depth and height, that God becomes this 360-degree embrace of us, up no matter where we are in terms of height and depth and length and breadth, that we are in that, are encompassed in God. This is the place where we get to explore that. This hour of worship it's really the only place, the one place where we get to explore and experience that sense of the vastness of God intentionally and in community. It's the one hour where we are drawn out of the mundane and into another realm of mystery and awe and majesty with one another. The sense of God who is not like us, but who draws us into this other realm. Some years ago, Chandler was the chair of this candidates committee that approves people, seminary students, for ordination, to be ready for ordination. And they approved an out lesbian as being ready for ordination. There was someone in the denomination at that time who was filing charges against anybody and everybody who did anything like that throughout this church. So Chandler ended up with charges filed against him for chairing this committee that made this decision. So we were talking about it one day, because it can mess up. If you have pending charges against you, you can't move from one church to another. There are certain things that sort of limits you for a while until those charges are heard and dismissed or acted upon or whatever. And so he was having to deal with that, and the presbytery was having to deal with that. And we were talking about it one night, and he said, you know, this is a bother, and you know, and one problem is that I'm totally guilty of what I'm charged with, so that's kind of an issue. And he said, but when I think of facing the judgment of this guy, Rolf Jensen was the guy's name, of facing Rolf Jensen's charges, or standing before God and having to answer for not approving this obviously called person for ordination, you know, if I weigh those two, it's like, who do I stand before with more fear? Rolf Jensen, creator of the universe. Rolf Jensen, creator of the universe. So that's part of what we're talking about with this vertical part of worship. And Annie Dillard, in one of her essays, writes about that as well. Wonderful writer. She's talking about church, and she says, does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we so blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children playing on the floor with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill a Sunday morning. It is madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews. They should lash us to our pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense, or the waking God may draw us out to where we can never return. Yeah, wow. So if my love of informality and humor takes away from your sense of awe and wonder and mystery and worship, I am doing you a great disservice, and I apologize. And I've had to consider that a little bit. It's not a serious issue, but some questions and concerns were brought to me and to the celebration committee about beverages in the sanctuary and people bringing their blackberries, not bringing their blackberries, using their blackberries during celebration. Now, obviously, People frequently need to drink something in worship. I always have to bring water because I'm terrified when I'm up here. And there's this always this little substrate of, oh my God, what do I think I'm doing? So I have to sip at my drink of water. So if you feel that when you come in here and feel you need to be lashed to the pew, a drink of water might be important. And there are medical reasons. I remember a church where I used to serve, there was a woman who'd had cancer in her mouth, and the radiation had destroyed her salivary glands. She sipped a little bottle of water all the time. No one will throw you out if you're sipping a beverage during the celebration. But there are two issues that the celebration committee had to consider. One was that accidents happen and there's spillage, and you know it's not intentional, but we should minimize the possibility of that as much as possible. But that there's also a distraction when someone is, there can be, some people are distracted when someone next to them is sipping coffee during church. And just an awareness of that is an important thing. And the same thing with cell phones and PDAs and those sorts of things. Accidents do happen with that. Mine went off during my sermon last week. I had turned off the little phone ringer, but I hadn't turned off the little reminder alarm that says, don't forget these announcements. You have this one from this person and this person. This person. So it was chiming to remind me of that, and I had to turn it off. So that does happen. But it's still an interruption. I remember I was presiding over a funeral in another town. It was a friend of mine from high school whose father had been murdered by his brother, who was mentally ill. It was this huge tragedy, shock and grief and guilt and just one of the most painful services I've ever had to do. And someone had flown from Denmark, where the family was from, to speak at this service. While he's speaking, someone's cell phone goes off in the front row. This close. Tiny little funeral home. Phone goes off, and I'm like, oh, the poor thing, you know, she's going to be so embarrassed. But she wasn't, and picked up the phone and started talking. I'm sorry, I'm at a funeral right now. It's not like I can't talk. It was like blah, 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 blah. So I actually had to go over. Would you please take that outside? So there are levels of consciousness about distraction and levels of distractibility and interruption and so on. So anyway, if someone is next to you surfing the web while you're trying to pray, it's a little bit of a problem. And so I just wanted to say that out loud. Look who Paris Hilton is dating. Oh, my God. So anyway, we put the little signs up saying, please don't bring beverages in, and a couple of announcements and contact, and thought, well, that'll be sufficient. But then I heard that someone had said, what's next, a dress code, you know. So this isn't about rules for worship. This is not about rules. I think we're still an informal place. But it's about this being the countercultural hour that we get to indulge in. We hate to waste time. We're not allowed to waste time. Everywhere else we go, we multitask. We drink our coffee as we drive to one thing or another. And we drink our coffee as we work. Or we sit on an airplane with our laptop. And we text when we're at meals. And we answer emails when we're at the soccer game. And I was at dinner with Kathy Ray the other night, and we were talking, and she said, you know, what's countercultural about worship is that we focus on one thing for a whole hour. When else do you do that? We bring our whole selves to this hour, not to be entertained, not to be emotionally manipulated by whatever's going on up front, but to encounter the living God in this moment and with this community of people. It's always a powerful thing for me when during the week I sit with a family or with someone who has just lost someone they love, and we talk together and we grieve together, and the very next Sunday they are here. They have stood in the face of the great mystery of life and death, and now they come to be with this community to move even more deeply into that mystery with God and with God's family. There is an attentiveness that is a part of the experience of worship. There were two, the Mudges and the Horns, there were two grieving families here last Sunday. All of us grieve the loss of these beloved people. But my sense as I stood up here was that the whole congregation was more present, was more attentive to the other people around them, to the movement of the service, to the words and the music and the silences and the prayers, because we had all encountered together the sacred mystery of life and death, and we all loved each other. And that's the way it is every week. The purpose of worship, if nothing else, is to know we are loved in the place where we talk to God. One of the ways we let people know them, know that we love them, is by creating and maintaining the space for each person here to experience this hour of worship, this royal waste of time. And we don't know what's in each other's hearts this morning. We don't know what sorrows people are carrying, what anxieties about children or work or money or whatever it may be. And we don't know what joys people are carrying, what extraordinary things might have happened in someone's life this week that they come here to celebrate in their own heart. But I promise you, those things are going on in people's hearts right now. All around you. And you don't want to distract people from that. There's this word forbearance in Scripture that means you have a right to do something, but you don't do it out of respect to other people. You forbear asserting that right. That's what this is about this gathering and not engaging in the activities that we engage in the culture, but focusing on the vertical and the horizontal dimensions of this hour. If you are bored or distracted, which happens, I promise, during worship, I invite you, rather than whatever, I invite you to pray for the person next to you, to love them and talk to God about that love. And that will be your worship. If the music isn't working for you, or if what I'm saying isn't working for you, pray for the person next to you. And then you will find yourself and them embraced in that breadth and length and height and depth of God's unfathomable love, which is the essence of our worship. Amen.